Welcome to Professionally Speaking on Business Radio X. I'm Dr. Alexa Chilcutt.
And I'm Dr. Adam Brooks.
And we are communication and presentation strategy experts.
So what does that mean?
All right. Not only are we the directors of the public speaking program at the University of Alabama, but we are practicing keynote speakers who deliver speeches and addresses to a variety of audiences across the country. And we work in partnership with the University of Alabama's College of Continuing Studies to provide professionally speaking workshops to professionals who are looking to calm public speaking anxiety, craft effective messages, and cultivate dynamic delivery.
When we talk to business radio listeners, they really want to know about that information that helps them gain success, gain credibility, help them engage with folks, clients, employees, whoever. And what we've come to realize is that communication is that common thread that connects all of those elements together. But when people are looking at that outstanding communicator, what they don't see is the backstory, the preparation, the moment of inspiration that actually leads to tentative and cognitive change. After speaking engagements, people approach us and they go, oh, that was so good. But they don't see the hours of struggle, how we've struggled to really develop those skill sets, and how we have ultimately challenged ourselves to become better speakers every single time we meet with audiences.
Or the ways in which, in our past, we've scraped our knees in public speaking occasions.
So in each professionally speaking interview, we're going to talk to innovators, entrepreneurs, thought leaders who are all successful but are struggling to get the right message to the right people at the right time.
And today, what we want to do is introduce ourselves. How did we get started as public speakers and authorities or experts in this field? I'll begin by interviewing my colleague, Adam Brooks. So Adam, you have a very different background than I do. And of course, we're from different generations as well.
Alexa's having an identity crisis.
I'm not a baby boomer, but
I would say you're a solidly Gen X.
Okay. And you're on the cusp of kind of graduating out of a millennial.
I'm becoming more comfortable with this saying that I'm a millennial. It's hard to articulate, but it's where I am.
Okay. So we have very different stories and how we arrived at the same place in being faculty members, but also being speakers in this area. How did you become a speaker?
Well, I'll tell you, it was through pure accident and terror. I was on stage a lot as a kid. I did a lot of theater, but I loved that because lights were off. I didn't have to look at people. I didn't have to say my own words, use my own ideas. And I was a very silent kid with a lisp. I hated talking in front of other people. Absolutely terrified. And it wasn't until I got into my latter part of my high school years that I didn't really have a lot of friends. I didn't have people that I could really connect to because I wasn't a good speaker. I didn't really enjoy communicating with other people in any kind of situation.
Right, so you were kind of reticent about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my high school English teacher had a group of people come by who were part of the speech and debate team.
Okay.
And they performed and I went, whoa, that's something I could do. And more than that, I realized it was the competitiveness because as a high schooler, people didn't really understand theater, but they could understand state championship.
Okay.
They could understand. I was a first generation college student. So I figured out you could actually get college scholarships to compete in speech and debate competitions. And that's when it really hit for me. So I had to work at it. It was something that I had to get connected to, being more one-on-one, not being so big, being overcoming that sense of discomfort that I have with the way that my lisp sounds in front of other people and how I use that to my advantage in particular ways. And then all of a sudden I realized that where I'm most comfortable is really helping people understand their own voice. And I got into that, started going into college. Then I worked in corporate public affairs for a while.
Right.
And I realized that there was something truly essential about helping people become the best communicators that they can be. And then all of a sudden, that just kind of took off.
Well, and you do have a very unique perspective in that you put yourself intentionally in a very demanding environment, being in speech and debate. And you are constantly kind of scrutinized and coached. And so most people don't have that opportunity or would not even put themselves in the line of fire. So going from that, where you've honed those skills, but they're very performative, to more of a corporate environment. You worked for Caterpillar. Mm-hmm. How did you make that adjustment? Because now you're having to do the thing that you didn't want to do, which was kind of that face-to-face, day-to-day communication with just normal people, and it wasn't as performative.
I had to realize that I was very fortunate to be a part of the Bradley University speech team. It definitely shaped my worldview. But what I learned a part of that experience wasn't so much the performative, but the transferable skills.
Hmm.
How do you think on your feet? How do you reasonably create an argument? How do you adapt your message to fit specific audiences?
Okay.
When I realized that that was at the core of what I was doing, mm-hmm. I could take that and transfer that to a variety of areas. So moving into Caterpillar, I had great mentors. I had great folks who kind of recognized that I had a talent that maybe they didn't have, but they could give me the direction that I desperately needed. So they kind of figured, we're going to use this guy's energy, this guy's dynamicism, this guy's kinetic way that he engages with the audience, and we're going to harness that to power what we have in terms of messages we're trying to get across.
Yeah, yeah.
And those two things connected really well together. And so they sent me out on lots of recruiting trips. I talked at a lot of employee meetings. And then I also helped work with our corporate speakers bureau, working with our executive vice presidents. How do they communicate to audiences and get that element? I think what I learned most efficiently is you have to get at the heart of what the meaning is of the message that you're trying to get at, where that mm-hmm. emotional resonance comes mm-hmm. from.
Even from a corporate perspective. So,
it's
Caterpillar. So what are they selling?
But this was Caterpillar during 2007, 2008, 2009. It was a rough time. So
okay.
we were talking about resilience. We were talking about going into the past and trying to find, in the midst of economic downturns and the largest crisis in the economy since the Great Depression, how does a corporation that's shedding jobs inspire mm-hmm. the people that have remained?
Wow.
And there's a real heart there. I mean, the problems are real. And I think for any business, you've got to remember that there is a real blood person who feels things that is at the other end of whatever communication channel you're using. And if you can get at that person's heart, that's it. That's the money.
And so really, that is your first experience in being a strategist.
Yes.
Right? Because in the speech and debate world, and I'll say this about Adam because he probably won't say this, you are a national champion in college for forensics. And mm-hmm. so, you know, having achieved that, but once again, it's very constructed. You choose a topic, mm-hmm. you delve into it, you know everything about it, and it's really kind of one-way communication. Then moving into a corporate situation where you're having to kind of absorb the information, but also tailor that information to the audience and their needs and the corporation's kind of overall vision and strategy, right? So, I mean, that's your transition
yeah.
from that performance to really kind of tailoring those messages to be more strategic.
I think what really hit it for me was, one, I needed to find an opportunity to really make the most of the gifts that I had. And speech and debate definitely honed those things. But then when I got out of that,
kind of the real world application for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I realized that there was value there. And even now, as I've gone on, it made me inspired to go on and further study. So I got my master's degree at the University of Alabama, went on to do my PhD. And I realized that there was something essential that I could teach people how to do. Now, a lot of that teaching I learned from that speech and debate where people would watch me and they would give me, I would say if there's one thing that a lot of folks can benefit from, having that person that gives you critical feedback.
Which is hard to find.
It is hard to find.
Because people want to say, oh, you did a great job. And they don't want to give critical feedback. They're afraid of hurting your feelings. But you have to create an okay environment for someone to do that.
And audiences' yeah. bodies will tell you everything you need to
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
People are so afraid to say, that was terrible. I didn't like that at all.
That's a whole nother episode.
It's true. It's true. And we can
talk
about that.
The 7 signs of a boring speaker and how Ooh. To combat that. We can do that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what I realized and I recognized was that there was something that I could do that could help people solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about what I was missing when I was in that corporate working for one person. And now I can get out there and really engage with lots of different people. It really inspired me. And I've come to realize that if you have something that helps somebody else be their best self, mm-hmm. that's something you've got to pursue 150%. And that's been what's been driven me to create some of these workshops that you and I create together, mm-hmm. and also to just get out there because I've realized that as our societies become more and more technologically sound, we've lost that ability to be communicatively savvy.
Mm.
And we no longer are learning how to get at one another in a really tangible way. And I wanted to figure out, okay, if we can do something here, let's do that. But it's still nerve-wracking for me. I think the biggest challenge that I face as a speaker presently is that I am young. I'm 30-something. That tends to, this something is the month that I'm adding
yes,
on
I know,
to my,
I know.
My 30-ness. But I mean, I'm often going into rooms where I'm the youngest person in the room by 10,
and they're looking
years.
At you on the stage wondering, what is this kid doing here?
Yeah, I usually make a joke about self-awareness that who is this child and what are they going to tell me about public
speaking? Right. Which is why we work so well together, because I add the age to this dynamic.
Now, see, it's just impolite for me to talk to you about age when...
But I can say it myself and it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I can make fun of my lisp and we're good. Yeah. But I think that that's one of the challenges that I face. So I think to anybody out there listening, realizing that you're never done growing. You're never really going to be complete. There's no perfect public speaker.
Right.
You've just kind of got to get out there. Now, I'm kind of curious. You've taken a different, more circuitous route to be where you are today.
Circuitous is a great, yes, great adjective. So I really was a stay-at-home mom for many years and had a degree in public relations and communication. And then as my children were kind of getting into school, I started working for a Catholic school as the development director. And that really is my niche, is public relations, development. I love networking, meeting people, making those connections. But that, well, and you know what? I'll back up, because I think we see this in teaching people a lot. You have a performative background. I do too. In my former life, I was a dancer. And so that allowed me the opportunity to be on stage and to see people from that perspective. And so I really think in a lot of ways that helped me transition into those opportunities that I had to be in front of people in a speaking situation. So as the development director at the Catholic school, you know, I was in front of parents. I was in front of the school board, selling ideas, talking about recruitment. That was really my foray into public speaking. And I worked there for about 5 years. And then something that you may not know about is that I was also very involved in a church, a women church group, and was the president of something. And then I wrote a little book. Anyway, don't look it up. But I gave a lot of workshops and speeches around that as well. And that's how I got into the master's program, because I received a scholarship from the National Speakers Association, which paid for my master's program. So I got a master's in advertising and PR, and then got into the PhD program, where as a PhD student, and of course, my children at this point were in high school, but I was teaching public speaking. And so I was taking those real life skills that I had learned on my own, was now transferring that to the college classroom. And in this role as the director of public speaking, which I'm now in my 7th year, you know, we have these opportunities, and you and I work together in this role, but we speak to so many groups. Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant process of polishing those skills. It's nothing that, and believe me, I've scraped my knees, made some bad choices. I've tried to memorize speeches and get up there and it just seems stilted. And then you forget something and you go blank.
Is there one story that stands out to you as a moment where you go, "Oof, that wasn't what I wanted it to be"?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
Not that they're all great. Not that they're all great. But I think I'm always taking away, there are different approaches to it. There's always something that you could do better. I've definitely walked away from a program that I thought that it just wasn't as engaging, because we know that people have an attention span. You can lose someone's attention in 8 seconds. In 8 seconds. So if you're not constantly really reaching out to that audience, keeping them interactive on some level, then you're losing them. Okay, no, I did. I came up with one. Yeah. Here's my failure, the big one. I was working in PR, and I had developed a logo for an organization.
Uh-huh.
They asked me impromptu to get up and speak about the logo, and we had made stickers and bumpers, all that. They said, okay, come tell us about it. I got up in front of this crowd of probably 200 people, had not prepared anything, which is always, always a bad idea. But I didn't know, right? So I was just thrust into that position. When I sat down, and I'm an expert at this. I'm the one who created it and did all the research and why we put it together. When I sat down, my friend looked at me and said, "Alexa, you said 50 times."
Mm.
And it was because I had not prepared. I didn't know. And so as I was searching for that next word or the next thing to say, I was including those verbal fillers. And I just remember walking away from there thinking, I didn't even realize that I had done that. I knew I wasn't good. And then I just felt like I had not communicated all the expertise and all of the work that had gone into that, which was a great product. But I had just failed miserably at communicating that. So there's my preparation is the key.
There's your
preparation
knee scraping story.
Is the key.
You got to think about what the meaning is. I think about my knee scraping story. I think the one that stands out to me probably the most was you mentioned my experience in speech and debate. My junior year, I had gotten all the way to the national final round. It was the very first time I'd gotten into a national final round in college. So to get there, you have to go through preliminary rounds, quarterfinal rounds, semifinal rounds, and then you get to the final, and this is the big moment. And I was like, I'm going to do this. And I was so incredibly nervous as I got up to the front of the room and I looked out, and for some reason, my body lost complete control. I started to shake uncontrollably, uncontrollably. My arm couldn't stop shaking. And I had this book that I was bringing with me up there as one of the visual aids of my speech.
Kind of your prop.
And I am shaking so hard that the book almost falls out of my hand. And I walked away from that experience going, that was supposed to be my moment. That was supposed to be this thing that I did that proved that I could do this thing I'd set out to do. I wanted to do that. And it ate me up for 3 months after that. Now, I adapted and I changed, but what I realized doing some self-reflection and some assessment there was that what was happening to me was adrenaline.
Yeah.
And I needed to plan for that, to know that my body was going to lose a little bit of control and be able to really focus on that. Now, let me ask you a question. So we're putting together this professionally speaking show. We're trying to figure out what is it that business leaders, why do they need to think about speaking? Why do they need to think about presentations? What are they going to gain from some of these conversations we're going to have with folks?
Well, as we know, working with professionals, and we do a lot of corporate training, not just through the University of Alabama, but we've gone to Atlanta to work with Allstate. We've, you know, gone many places. And all of the groups, what I think we both are kind of shocked by is exactly what you were just talking about. Anxiety, first of all, you know, giving people the tools to understand, kind of demystify the process of speaking or presentations, because we know that there are terrible presentations that are going on every day.
Horrible.
And everybody that's listening to this has had to, including ourselves, has had to sit through countless terrible presentations and countless terrible speakers. And if we're really honest with ourselves, we have performed terrible presentations and given terrible speeches. And so demystifying that idea that there are naturally great speakers, which is just a lie. There might be people who have kind of natural charisma or dynamism or are good communicators or effective speakers, but they're not naturally wonderful speakers. It's a skill set. So I think what we're trying to do through this medium with Business Radio X is give a platform, kind of a voice to people as we interview those innovators and entrepreneurs, of letting them share with us their own stories, as we've just done, their own stories of what is a time that they failed? What have they learned from some of the mistakes that they've made giving presentations? And what are the key kind of tools or tips or strategies that they have to make those presentations connect with audiences, create messages that resonate with that audience so that they can create that buy-in or have that ask at the end that's really powerful that gets that audience to take action. So what we're trying to do is give people an opportunity to listen to other professionals who've walked this walk and who are still working at making these kind of great presentations.
The other thing I found is that the metaphor I like to use is kind of like cooking. There are world-class chefs out there, but everybody's got to cook a meal. Same is true with presentations. There are world-class speakers who just have that, maybe that natural charisma and that ability, but everybody's got to get up and talk at some point. And we often think about one of our partners is through the College of Continuing Studies. And that is based upon the idea that you have to continue to grow and learn throughout your entire life. We get a lot of folks, we teach the public speaking class to undergraduate students, and they sometimes just kind of go through it, but you don't realize the power and the potential that you have to really reach audiences and gain momentum in your career until later on.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they go,
you don't know what you don't know until you need it. Right.
I need to work on my public speaking. Or you get a boss who sits you down and shoots it to you straight and says, hey, listen, we're going to need you to work on that. So that's what we want to do. We want to provide that voice to help people to learn a little bit about what we've learned over the course of our careers, and also to learn from each other, to talk through those elements, demystify that process, and make ourselves a little bit more connectable. That's why we hope that you'll join us, listening in, learning a little bit about the kind of crucial conversations that we have, gaining the tips that you need from our speaking studio, and honestly, learn a little bit about how we get the right message to the right people.
Join us on Professionally Speaking, brought to you by Business Radio X.